James Perloff, P as in Peter, Erloff. And yes, I've been a journalist since 1985 when I started writing for the New American Magazine, conservative American journal. I became red-pilled in 1978 when I read Gary Allen's book, None Dare Call a Conspiracy. That's when I became aware that the world was really being run by oligarchs and not truly by democracy. And I wrote a book in 1988, which is still in print, still something of a bestseller, The Shadows of Power, about private influences on American government. And I've written six books since then. But the most important one is the most, for today's discussion, is the most recent one. This is COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, red-pilled. I should mention that I was a registered nurse. In addition to being a writer, I was a registered nurse in the state of Massachusetts for 45 years. I retired in 2019, just before the pandemic began. And so I have a grounding in medical terminology, experience in infection control. I knew right away that quarantining healthy people made no sense. So I said to myself, I'd been working on a book on 9/11 for several months, and that was going along nicely. But when I saw that this was the real push for world government, which we'd been following for decades in alternative media, I had dropped the project on 9/11, and immediately I said, if they're going to have a warp speed vaccine, they're going to have a warp speed book. So I produced that book in 3 months, and it was a bestseller on Amazon. It actually ranked number one in respiratory diseases, alternating in the number one spot with a book by Judy Mikovits. And it sold over 3,500 copies in less than 2 months, but then Amazon banned it. I was expecting that. So I had my own truck, which arrived 4 days later, with my own separate print of the book, the exact same book. And I found a distributor who snapped it right up. And you can get the book anywhere except Amazon, Barnes & Noble Books, a million. In the UK, you can get it at the UK Book Depository or Waterstones. And that book, it came out in August 2020. But I covered every aspect of the pandemic at that time. You know, I had a section of chapters on the lockdown, a section on how they were inflating the COVID numbers, you know, the death certificates, conflating in COVID with other diseases, a section on theories about what COVID really was. And I had a section on the end game of the establishment, you know, the global reset, the vaccine program,
which I knew was forthcoming. James, the intriguing part of the title of your book has got to be about the agendas to come, but we'll leave that for a minute.
Sure.
Can you just tell us about your time in mainstream journalism? Because that sounds, I wonder, did you ever get to, whilst you were a journalist, inkling that maybe things weren't quite right in the profession? I just wonder how you found that time in mainstream journalism.
Well, actually, just to clarify, I was not a mainstream journalist. The New American Magazine is alt media in the United States. But I know you were in mainstream media with the BBC, isn't that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was not a mainstream journalist. I recognized that they were under control. And in my first book, I did have a chapter on control of the media, which, of course, is consolidated in the United States. We now have just five corporations controlling almost all the movie studios, the news channels, the newspapers, you name it. They've all been bought up. They used to be independent, like National Geographic used to be an independent magazine. Now it's owned by Disney, just like ABC News is owned by Disney, just like ESPN, the sports network, is owned by Disney. I mean, it's all consolidated. And so there's really no diversity there. But even 34 years ago, when I wrote that book, it was clear to us that there was centralized control of the media. But I was not a mainstream journalist myself.
I mean, it seems to me you've got an enormous amount of financial power, which wants to get its way. And one of the ways it does it is it just buys up any media outlets which are pushing back against that power. It's a pretty simple formula, but it seems to work. We are now a year down the line into these so-called vaccines, these, I mean, I don't even like to use the word treatment to say what they are.
Right.
Wonder where you think we are, James, because these are very new types of vaccines, they call them. All being administered around the world, particularly the Western world, under this emergency use authorization, which actually is only allowed when there is supposed to be no alternative treatment to those experimental vaccines. We're now being told here in the press in Britain, oh, it's very important that pregnant mothers have no concerns about taking the vaccines, when we were also told at the time, if we have a memory, and it seems that we're not supposed to have a memory, that pregnant women, for example, and children were not even included in these very sketchy trials. So where do you think we are a year into this vaccine program? These vaccines having been, you know, we've been told anyway, this is going to be like the knight in shining armor.
Hard to believe that at this point. Well, in my book, COVID-19 Agendas to Come, Red Pilled, I had a chapter called 8 Reasons Why We Don't Need a COVID vaccine. And I won't go into all those here, but one of them was that the survival rate of COVID was so high. Even the CDC in May of 2020 put the survival rate for all ages combined at 99.74%. Stanford put it higher. Of course, the CDC, as we know, conflates people who die from cancer or heart disease. If they happen to test positive, they count that as a COVID death. So the 99.74% survival rate was too low. But besides that, so there was no need to warp speed a vaccine or to force people to take it. But as you mentioned, the alternative treatments, I had a full chapter in there in the book on hydroxychloroquine used with zinc. And as an example, Dr. Brian Tyson of the U.S., cured 1,700 patients of COVID using hydroxychloroquine with zinc. He had zero deaths, and other doctors told a similar story. And now, of course, we've got ivermectin, which is considered even better. But on top of that, the mRNA gene therapy is entirely experimental. Why would you do an experimental treatment which has not been subjected to the 5-year period that vaccines are normally given, at least 5 years minimum, here, at least here in the United States, no animal trials done, just wanting the world population to get it. It makes no sense. There's no logic behind it. But now that we're into the rollout, we can add to that that the we've got the numbers from VAERS, which is the CDC's own vaccine adverse event reporting system, which shows as of December the 10th, over 20,000 deaths following vaccination. And over 106,000 hospitalizations, over 12,000 cases of Bell's palsy. And here's the thing, Tony, is that the VAERS system is grossly underreported. Many doctors don't know it exists. And on my website, jamesperloff.net, I've got 3 major updates to the book. Including there a link to an interview with Deborah Conrad, who was a physician's assistant at a major hospital. She was reporting vaccine injuries to the CDC, and she encouraged her colleagues to do so in the hospital. As a result, she was fired. And I linked to another interview with an MD. In her hospital, she said she was seeing a lot of vaccine injuries, but her hospital made it a policy that if anything happened, like a heart attack, more than 7 days after the vaccine, they wouldn't count that as a vaccine reaction. So we know that the 20,000 deaths is a gross understatement. I should mention, by the way, I know people who have died or been severely injured and harmed by these vaccines personally. The other thing about the vaccines is they don't
What about the virus, though? I mean, you know, most of us also know people who've been injured. And I mean, there's both sides. Both the virus has been killing people as they have the vaccines.
Right. Whatever COVID truly is, they say it has not been isolated as a virus, but, they've certainly spotted this spike protein. And many people think it's a bioweapon. And then, you know, I know David Icke and other people have had other explanations for it, but I included all the theories, the exosome theory and the rest in my book, because I wanted to be very open on it. Yes, I agree. People have died from COVID. I am close to medical professionals who were in major hospitals who told me, yes, that we do have COVID, and it was distinguishable from the flu, I mean, there were things like the complete loss of smell and of taste. But one of the main distinguishing characteristics of COVID response was the cytokine storm in the lungs. We have an autoimmune response there, and some young people did die from that. That is true. However, the numbers were grossly inflated by counting people who had comorbidities as vaccine as COVID related. And if you've seen any of the interviews with Dr. Scott Jensen, he was outraged when he got instructions from the CDC to report anybody who was just suspected of having COVID to put that on the death certificate. So the numbers have been, COVID is real, but it's been inflated. Montanari predicted, he said that you can never, ever create an effective COVID vaccine because the coronavirus continually mutates. We've known about them since the 1960s. They're one of the causes of the common cold. And he said, people never get immune to the common cold. They keep getting cold throughout their life. Why is that? Because the viruses keep mutating. He says the coronavirus will continue to mutate. And so you will never see an end to the vaccination. It will be big business. Big business is the word he used. So it's no surprise that we've seen Delta and Omicron. Viruses always mutate. And, when Omicron it was announced, actually the woman who discovered it was Dr. Angelique Coetzee, head of South Africa's Medical Association. She said, listen, this is mild. Nobody's been hospitalized from it. But it was not a surprise. I mean, I'm sure that Dr. Fauci was not surprised because he knows that the coronaviruses always mutate. That's what they do. In fact, Luc Montagnier of France, famous virologist who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the HIV virus, he has stated that it's the vaccines that are really pushing and creating these variants that they're talking about. You might compare it to antibiotics, where an antibiotic will, in the past, by overusing antibiotics, we created superbugs because the bacteria, which antibiotics are designed to treat, will mutate in response to the antibiotic and become stronger. And so we're seeing the similar thing with the virus, I think, if we can call it a virus. I want to quote something, and I'll throw it back to you. This is from Jancy Lindsay, PhD, molecular biologist, managing director of toxicology and molecular biology at Toxicology Support Services. She says, quote, just to be clear scientifically, it is the vaccinated, not the unvaccinated, spreading the variants. This is from inoculating during a pandemic with poor neutralizing vaccine. This is what happened with numerous other leaky vaccines in the past. I warned the CDC of this in April of this year. Other scientists warned the CDC as well as other scientific entities worldwide months ago. Yet here we are, so spare me the propaganda that the unvaccinated are the ones causing this, because they are not. And that's a clearly defined mechanistic pathway for how the vaccinated are creating the mutants. The solution would be to stop vaccinating with these terrible genetic therapies and start treating everyone at high risk with cheap, safe, and effective hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin until the virus is driven out. So this would stop the binding, replication, and transmission of the virus. Oh, but it would cost virtually nothing, and therein is the problem. In other words, it won't make profits for Pfizer. So there are many doctors and scientists speaking out. Some of them have done so at the risk of losing their licenses and jobs. But that's just an example of what's happening. So these variants are expected. You expect the coronavirus to mutate. And by the way, I should probably mention that the CEO of Pfizer has recently stated, and they've tried to take this off of social media. He said that let me see if I can find the quote real quick. It's from Albert Bourla. He said, quote, two doses of the vaccine offer very limited protection, if any. So he's saying his own vaccine doesn't basically work. But the reason he said this, I'm sure, is because he wanted everyone to get the boosters, because Pfizer said they'll have a booster ready for Omicron in March. But he kind of slipped up by saying the first two don't work, basically, or they're not sure if they work at all. So they've been trying to suppress that on social media. Social media has been taking down that video, that interview of him.
Okay, so we've seen a pretty much right across the Western world, in fact, even into China as well, a pretty similar response from world leaders, haven't we, James?
Yeah, there's a reason for that.
Well, I'm thinking maybe it's something to do with the World Health Organization, who has been issuing the advice. But what do you think?
Well, that's to be sure, that's part of it. And of course, they're heavily interlocked with the pharmaceutical industry. But one of the things I wanted to mention, with this just came out very recently, is when I wrote my book, The Shadows of Power, in 1988, that came out. It sold well over, I don't know how many copies it sold, but certainly over 100, well over 100,000. What documented in that book was why it was that U.S. policies change so little when we change administration. You know, we go from Republican to Democrat to Republican to Democrat, yet our foreign policy would remain the same, our trade policies remain the same. And the reason was, as I documented in the book, was that the administrations were drawing their cabinet members for the same organization in New York City, the Council on Foreign Relations, which was established by J.P. Morgan and Company, and then the Rockefellers took it over. David Rockefeller was a chairman for many, many years. And I went administration by administration, showing how the CFR had dominated each administration. And that's true of the Biden administration as well. About half of his cabinet members are from the Council on Foreign Relations. But when we come to COVID, a very interesting article has come out on the Rare Foundation. This is quite recent. Exposed Klaus Schwab School for COVID Dictators Plan for the Great Reset. And it says here in the article, how is it that more than 190 governments from all over the world ended up dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic in exactly the same manner, with lockdowns, mask mandates, and vaccination cards now being compliant? The answer may lie in the Young Global Leaders School, which was established and managed by Klaus Schwab in 1992, Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum, and that many of today's prominent political and business leaders passed through on their way to the top. So who are some of the people who went to this school? Tony Blair, Angela Merkel, Emmanuel Macron, Jacinda Ardern of New Zealand, the prime minister there, other prime ministers, health ministers have gone through. Also Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos of Amazon, and Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, and of course, also Chelsea Clinton, who's Hillary Clinton's daughter. So we see that they all have been, were matriculated into Klaus Schwab's school, and they obviously were indoctrinated. And so we see this otherwise inexplicably uniform response from all the world leaders. Now, this may not, of course, as you mentioned, the World Health Organization, the Gates Foundation has its, tentacles through its $48 billion in assets into many places. But I think that's one of the explanations, which has been a novel very recently in breaking news.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you would expect the big media networks, NBC, CBS, BBC, etc., to have done, penetrating hour-long documentaries into, the school for leaders. You know, this is the idea that someone is kind of tapped up in their teens even and told, you are going to be a leader of tomorrow, This is what you will do. And of course, you know, if you're being told that, then you're going to not, part of the quid pro quo is you don't think for yourself. You're going to be told what to think in that role. There's also, it's interesting, James, because I lived in Oxford for several years, and there we've got the Rhodes Scholars, a very similar sort of a program that was set up by Cecil Rhodes, in his will, I believe, at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 1900s. So that had been going for even longer. And we have also things like the Yale World Scholars program. So there are a handful in the West, particularly in Britain. And obviously you've got Klaus Schwab too. The idea being that you're going to produce they would say, wouldn't they, very well educated, tremendously well educated people who would be brilliant at running the world. But then some might say, well, these guys and girls will be very pliable and do whatever you tell them, because you've got the measure of them over the years through these programs. Anyway, look, what about the illogical things? Because I know you've been picking out some of these in response to COVID, because you know, there are certain basic things that happen. If you've got a, you know, an epidemic that looks like it's coming along, there is a certain response that you should have. But and as you've pointed out in some of your articles, I see that you think that there's some fundamentally illogical things that have happened that don't actually stand up to any kind of rational questioning, which I suppose is the sort of thing they get at the BBC, which is a failure to ask the questions. Anyhow, illogical stuff. What is it?
Well, there's so many examples, but to take New York for starters, the governor there at the time, Andrew Cuomo, gave an order that no one could visit their family members in a nursing home, even if they're totally healthy. And the explanation was you got to protect grandma because healthy people are, you know, studies have shown, for example, coming out of the University of Florida, there's no evidence for healthy people who are asymptomatic spreading COVID. But anyway, he made that a rule. But at the same time, to allegedly to take the pressure off hospitals, he put patients from hospitals who had COVID into the nursing homes, and they spread it, with resulting in at least 5,800 deaths. It spread like wildfire in the nursing homes. Now, I was a registered nurse for 45 years, most of the time as a frontline medical surgical nurse, but I also worked in nursing homes. I can tell you they're not equipped to deal with acutely ill patients. We send the acutely ill into the hospital. We don't receive them. They don't have the isolation equipment, the quarantine, the gowns, the masks that are normally required. So that was totally illogical. Now, the new governor of New York is Kathy Hochul, and the headline with her was she was firing 70,000 healthcare workers because they wouldn't take the vaccine in the state of New York. Now, if we're in a pandemic, does it make logical sense to fire 70,000 healthcare workers? So you can see the results of this when Mount Sinai Long Beach Hospital, Long Beach is an island off of the Big Island of Long Island, it had an ER, but it fired 72 doctors, nurses, and workers because they wouldn't take the vaccine, so they had to close their ER. So now anybody on that island who had was in a car accident or had a stroke or a heart attack, they didn't have an ER to go to. They would have to go a long ways to get to an ER because it was the governor was destroying the healthcare system. And in my own state of Massachusetts, same thing has happened. I don't know the numbers, total numbers here in Massachusetts, but I did see UMass Memorial has laid off 200 who wouldn't take the vaccine. And our governor, Charlie Baker, has now deployed the National Guard, the military, to supplement hospital staff. Well, why is it? Because he himself is destroying the healthcare system. It's imploding. And this makes no sense. And by the way, I should mention that I linked to this from my updates page. Andrew Ansbrough, president of the Uniformed Firefighters Association of Greater New York, explained why so many firefighters were not taking the vaccine. They don't trust it, you know. So now in New York City, you've got a number of empty firehouses. No firemen there to answer to a fire alarm. At the same time, I've got a link to the interview with the CEO of the American Trucking Association, who said that 37% of his truckers will not take the vaccine. He said that if they're forced to leave their jobs, we're already short tens of thousands of drivers. The supply chain will totally implode in the United States. The post office is begging the Biden administration not to and try to enforce this mandate. They're already having trouble delivering the mail. Our mail system could collapse. In the military, 50% of the military don't want the vaccine. And there's an interview, which I linked to with Tucker Carlson, with a naval commander who explains it's because the chances of surviving COVID in the military are 99.99%. They don't die from COVID in the military. They're young, healthy men. So why should they be forced? We're in danger of destroying our entire nation over these insane mandates. Now, I have other illogical responses, but I want to stop there in case you have any comments.
You can find all that stuff at jamesperloff.net, which is jamesperloff.net. Thanks, James. And, you know, it's interesting talking to other journalists because I think many of us, particularly freelancers, really want to speak out about the contradictions and the it seems insane, some of this, but it seems pretty clear to me also that there may well be other agendas. So there's something going on, you know, other things that this isn't necessarily anything to do with a virus. And here right. in Britain, we've got a whole group of journalists. We call ourselves Holding the Line. You can find us online at holding-the-line.com. And we are doing what we can, I suppose, to point out some of the failings in the media, as well as to report the stories, report the doctors that are being censored, because we've seen many of our mainstream media and even things like YouTube doing enormous amounts of censorship of life-saving right. information. So something that might save your life, well, it won't, because YouTube have sent it down in the oublier, you know, the great big hole in the bottom of the castle that sends you down into onto the rocks. That's where YouTube right. sends some of these heroic doctors with their life-saving information, and they're putting their careers on the line for the lives of the general public, which is what doctors, good doctors, are there to do. But anyway, one of the fascinating aspects of all of this is the way that these vaccine manufacturers, the gene therapy manufacturers, the mRNA people, James, have kept all their actual, there's a shroud of secrecy, commercial confidentiality surrounding what's even in these vaccines.
Well, that's correct. Let's see. I was just going to mention regarding the science before I get onto that.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
There's so many things that, you know, they keep saying follow the science, right? And a lot of the people of Provax say, "Oh, I follow the science." Well, naturally acquired immunity is well known to be superior to any immunity you get from a vaccine, and that's been established by scientific studies. For example, if you get the chickenpox, you're immune to the chickenpox. After that, you don't need a chickenpox vaccine. But people who have had COVID and have their own antibodies to COVID are being told you still have to get the vaccine. Now, that is anti-science. It's against the science that's been established. Another example, this is Orwellian. The World Health Organization, on their website, and we have screenshots that prove this, used to define herd immunity as something that was acquired when a disease spread through the community until it ran its course. Now on their website, they've changed the definition that herd immunity is only acquired through vaccines. It's like, how can you change the science like that? And another thing, and this is something I know you can relate to in Britain, is the fact that the elite don't follow their own rules. I mean, President Obama had a birthday party on Nantucket Island in my state of Massachusetts. There are plenty of shots. There was no masking, no social distancing. At the Emmy Awards, none of the attendees wore masks or observed social distancing. At the G7 summit, they did a little photo op with masks on, but then you saw them all, Justin Trudeau and Emmanuel Macron, they're all chumming together really close, no masks, no social distancing. Boris, I think, is pretty famous for not wearing a mask or ripping it off after the camera is gone. The Downing Street party, Matt Hancock, your health minister, having an affair with his aide who was married, when this adulterous affair, obviously no social distancing or masking when the closed circuit television caught them making out. And then Neil Ferguson, professor lockdown from Imperial College, did the same thing, had an affair with a married woman, violating his own lockdown mandate that he recommended. And here in America, Don Lemon, anchor for CNN, was trying to crucify the state of Florida for not having vaccine mandates, and he bore down hard, and people didn't wear a mask. Then people caught him in Florida poolside with his boyfriend, not wearing a mask, you know. So the elite don't follow their own rules, you know. I mean, there's so much that so much else we can go into, but
I'd like to just pin you down on these vaccines if I can, because, you know, it's dangerous to be putting something in your body which has not been properly tested, but doubly dangerous surely if the manufacturers refuse to tell you what's in it.
Right. And they've been using the idea that it's proprietary information, but obviously everybody has a right to know what they're having injected into them. Now, there's two parts to this about what's in these vaccines. One is that early on in the vaccine rollout, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny tested or looked at the contents of some of the vaccine vials. She found some contained the vaccine or so-called vaccine, and others were just normal saline or placebos. And, you know, I take that into consideration. But then there was the nurse in Slovenia who's in charge of distributing these vaccines gave a quit her job and made a public announcement. And I linked to that on from my updates pages. She said that she had examined the vials and some were placebos and some were not. And she said the politicians are definitely getting the placebos. And now we have this confirmed by, and this can be helpful to people to know, in the VAERS database. Again, this is the CDC's own vaccine adverse event reporting system. Vaccines come in lot numbers, or they call them batch numbers. Certain lots have caused extreme reactions, death and disability, where others have caused no reaction. And this is true for Moderna, it's true for Pfizer, it's true for Johnson & Johnson. It's not a mistake. There should be uniformity, but there is not. And the question is, why are they allowing some to be so lethal and some to not be? Some people think they're trying to test out what is most harmful. My own belief is that they wanted to boil the frog on this. They knew that if you have a company with 1,000 employees and the first 100 take the vaccine and they drop dead or they have get paralyzed or have myocarditis, that they will scare off the other 900 employees of that company. So they wanted some people to take the placebo and say, hey, look, I took the vaccine, I'm fine, there's no problem at all. But then as they have these continuous boosters for more and more variants, which are inevitable, it's like playing Russian roulette where there's one bullet in the chamber. Sooner or later, you're going to get that shot that kills you. And we've seen this happen where somebody took the first shot and the second shot, no problem. And then the third shot, they dropped dead. And so I think they knew they had to do this incrementally. But the database that shows you all the lot numbers is called howbad.info, howbad.info. And you can, if you have received the vaccine, you have your lot number there, you can put it into the database and see how harmful or not harmful that particular lot was.
Well, I mean, just to remind you that we had an incident last year, didn't we? I think it was around about April 2021, with Johnson & Johnson confirming that they accidentally put all the wrong ingredients into some batches and many thousands of vaccines had to be destroyed. So it seems that maybe, I mean, that's, as you and I, as journalists know, sometimes things like that slip through the net and they won't make it into the news at all.
Although this has been true, these batch numbers have been true for Moderna and Pfizer. It seems to be very all the companies are doing this, and that shouldn't be happening. These should be very uniform, and they should be under strict quality control.
I also point out that this is another reason why everybody, including the patients as well as doctors, clinicians, etc., need to know what is supposed to be in the vaccines so that if they wish to, they can set a vaccine aside, test it and make sure it's all right. So this is another aspect of this, that if the manufacturers are keeping all this information secret, there's no way for people to properly test to see if they've got a dodgy batch or not. So this makes puts all of the control into the hands of a pharmaceutical industry that quite clearly is not going to want to voluntarily give information about dud batches or bad batches or whatever. Just looking at your current research, whereabouts are you at, James, with what you've been looking at on the I think what I'm saying here is not so much about the response, immediate response, but what is the bigger picture, do you think?
Just to complete the previous thought, there was one other aspect to this about the contents of the vaccines, which is what's being seen on magnification. Dr. Kerry Madej, who's been an outspoken opponent of this whole response to the pandemic, in September, she and her medical colleague went to a lab, and at the lab they put contents of a vial of the vaccine under, this was Moderna, as I recall, under a microscope, and they found strange impurities in there, what looked like little metallic nanotechnology things. And they also found this, almost call it a creature. It appeared to be alive. It had tentacles, and it was moving around. And the same thing happened when they tested it a second time. Now, of course, that was Carrie Madej, and some people say, well, maybe she was faking all this. But now we've had reports from Ricardo Delgado, who's a Spanish biostatistician, doctors in South Korea, doctors in South Africa, and most recently doctors in Germany. And I want to encourage people to look at this. It's very recent. These German doctors, you can find this on the RARE Foundation, that is spelled R-A-I-R, RARE Foundation, found substances. They heated up. They did, you know, it depends on sometimes on the degree of magnification, and some these German doctors actually heated up the samples of vaccines to human body temperature to see how they would be reacting. They found that they were these worm-like creatures which were hatching from eggs, and they also found, and this is also true of Ricardo Delgado, they found square metallic-looking objects with sharp edges under extreme magnification, and it looks like it is some type of nanotechnology.
Okay,
we don't know.
James, have they been sharing video evidence of this and that
yes.
sort of thing?
Oh, yes, it's on video. Go to the RARE Foundation. They've got the pictures there, and the doctors are discussing it. And these are doctors are very similar to what they call America's frontline doctors. These are doctors taking a stand against the lockdowns and the vaccine passports. Another thing they've been finding also, of course, is graphene oxide, which is very toxic, but is a tremendous conductor of electricity. And the question is, why would they put that into a vaccine? And by the way, this has been confirmed in an interview, which I linked to on my updates pages, with the former Pfizer employee, Karen Kingston. She revealed, yes, the mRNA vaccines have graphene oxide in them. We don't know exactly why they want that there, but since it's such a superconductor of electricity, some people think that perhaps it's designed to coordinate with 5G, which we have always thought is kind of suspicious that the vaccines and the 5G were being rolled out at the same time. But those are some of the things people can be looking at, is the fact that there are impurities in these vaccines that are not being disclosed, but that doctors in multiple countries have now found. So it's not just one person making this claim. It's around the globe that these impurities are being found. So this is another cause of alarm. But I did want to get on to your other question about
the bigger picture. I think, you know, we want to look at this in a biblical, spiritual point of view, maybe, but also in a global political point of view. What's the bigger picture?
Well, one thing is, from a spiritual point of view, many people think this is the beginning of what we call the mark of the beast. You know, in the book of Revelation, chapter 13, it says the beast required all people, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or their forehead, so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark. Now, what set off alarm bells for me early in the lockdown was that people couldn't buy or sell without a mask. And so in my book, again, this is August 2020, so almost a year and a half ago, the first sentence of chapter 23 on global digital IDs was, in the future, in order to travel, shop, and work, you will probably require proof of vaccination. And of course, that's come to light to reality now with the vaccine passports. And at the time, 2020, people saying this is a crazy conspiracy theory, but all of our conspiracy theories have turned out to be spoiler alerts. They've come true.
This not buying and selling sounds to me much more like the contactless payment card, something like that.
You couldn't buy or sell, like, say, without a mask. Now in places like Lithuania, you can't go into a supermarket without your vaccine credentials. And of course, Germany and Austria are following suit, and the lock, they seem a bit like they're locking down harder on the continent. And you have to show your QRS code. Now, when we talk about the mark of the beast, that's obviously on your person. Could they do that? And yes, there's two ways they could do that. In my book, this is not so new, but I quoted the Rice School of Bioengineering, and here's what they said on their own website. So it's not a conspiracy theory. It said, quote, Kevin McHugh, assistant professor of bioengineering at Rice, and a team from MIT report in a cover story in Science Translational Medicine on their development of quantum dot tags that fluoresce with information after they're injected as part of a vaccination. The tags are incorporated into an array of sugar-based microneedles on a patch. When the needles dissolve, they deliver the vaccine and leave the pattern of tags under the skin, where they become something like a barcode tattoo. Instead of ink, this highly specific medical record consists of copper-based quantum dots embedded in the micron-scale capsules. The near-infrared dye is invisible, but the pattern they set can be read and interpreted by a customized smartphone. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation came to us and said, hey, we have a real problem knowing who's vaccinated, said McHugh, end quote. And that's from Rice School of Bioengineering's own website. Now, Bill Gates said in an interview, quote, we need a new way of doing the vaccines. He said the vaccines can be, quote, just a little patch you put on your arm. So that's a lot like the mark of the beast. But there's another thing, too, that has just come out. This is new. It's been this is from Insider, but it's from also in the mainstream media. A Swedish company has created a microchip that allows users to carry their COVID vaccine passport under their skin. And quoting from the article, it says, when the implant is scanned with a smartphone, one's COVID-19 vaccination details and test results can be viewed as a PDF. The name of the company in Sweden is Disruptive Subdermals. Now, I find the word disruptive is a very negative term. I'm surprised that would be in the name of a company, disruptive. But the article says, they're referring to, I don't know if I'll say his name right, Hannes Schloblad, managing director of Disruptive, demonstrated how it was possible to scan the chip with his own phone to bring up a PDF that showed all the details of his EU digital COVID certificate. So you've got the possibility of a digital tattoo or a microchip, which would be like the mark of the beast, and you wouldn't be able to buy or sell without it. Now, and you know, in decades ago, I heard people speculating on the mark of the beast, and you know, I always didn't pay too much attention because people were always too eager to get ahead of themselves on that. But I really feel that at this point, if you're going to have microchips or digital tattoos, that you cannot go into a store or go to your job and work without that being on your body, we're awfully close to what the Bible described as the mark of the beast. I think you can't get much closer. I do have an article on my website. Became a member of the Eastern Orthodox faith in 2017, and I am quoting their elders, people from what they call Mount Athos, abbots of monasteries, bishops and archbishops and priests and monks who are speaking out that, no, this isn't the mark of the beast right now because the beast isn't here yet. We haven't seen him. But it seems that we are incrementally progressing towards that. You know, world government, it's come about, been coming about incrementally over the years. We saw the League of Nations and that failed, and then they had the UN, which was stronger, and then we saw the EU as a stepping stone towards world government. They're moving progressively, I think, towards the mark of the beast. It's not something that we're going to do overnight, but it's something that with these digital implants in your skin, without which you can't conduct business, I think they're bringing us to that point. I think we're on the precipice of what they call the end times in Christianity. I don't think that's a mistake at this point. I think it's almost in your face.
Yeah, it could be. So what's the way out, do you think, James, finally?
Before I do, I don't know if you have time left. I wanted to just mention about the Great Reset because something new came out about that. You know, part of this plan is to to obviously to depopulate the planet. Bill Gates, as we know, is totally into population control from his TED talk. And Prince Philip was famously said they'd love to come back as a deadly virus.
Well, yes, but Prince Charles said something even more, I think, shocking, which was that we need three planets for all the people that are here, which is implying he wants to see he wants 2/3 of the world's population out of the way.
And Ted Turner said, the founder of CNN, said he'd like to see 95% of the world's 95% reduction of world population, which the only way to do that would be to kill people.
Yeah, so the World Economic Forum, interesting little group, they have a sort of almost like world government wannabe characters. What's the latest on them then?
Okay, so what we have coming from the World Economic Forum, this is not just them, but this just came out maybe 2 or 3 days ago. This is on Robert F. Kennedy's website, the Children's Health Defense Fund. International finance leaders hold war game exercise simulating global financial collapse. Should we be wary? High-level international banking officials and organizations gathered last month for a global war game exercise simulating the collapse of the global financial system. The tabletop exercise was reminiscent of Event 201, the pandemic simulation exercise that took place just before COVID-19 entered the global scene. It says it's called the Collective Strength Initiative. It was held for 10 days, beginning on December the 9th of 2021 at the Israeli Finance Ministry. It says Israel led a 10-country contingent that included treasury officials from the U.S., Austria, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, England's not in there, Switzerland, Thailand, and the United Arab Emirates, representatives from supranational organizations such as the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, and Bank of International Settlements also participated, and it says that the World Economic Forum also participated in a more indirect way. But the thing is, they were simulating the response to a world financial crisis, and with all these financial actors on the scene, it makes you wonder if that means that we are on the coming of a world financial crisis, which would lead to what Klaus Schwab calls the Great Reset. I'm sure most of your viewers are familiar with these promos for the World Economic Forum, which say, welcome to 2030. I own nothing. I have no privacy and life has never been better. This is how the world could change by 2030. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. I don't think they'll be happy in a surveillance state where they own the nothing, but that's what they're predicting. But that would take.
Well, maybe the World Economic Forum is going to tell them they're going to be happy, James. And if you're feeling a bit unhappy, they'll give you some happy pills to make you happy.
Well, that's what happened in Orwell's 1984. You know, they would give them this this low grade gin to kind of subdue their objections to the system that they were living under. But they're aiming for a global reset with a digital currency. You know, China is totally cashless right now. Even the beggars in the street don't take cash anymore. They take you can swipe a card and give a beggar a donation, but as you know, in China, that you have to keep up your social credit score to get the right allowance in your digital financial ID. So that's obviously being beta tested for the whole world. And what they plan is a system where no one will have cash anymore, but you will be dependent on the government to give you a digital ID.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that talked about as the system of the ancient Egyptians. They had a credit-based system. So the question is, to wrap up, is what about the way out? Because I mean, you're talking there about a financial collapse, which would be horrendous for many people. I suppose it would feel worse for people who have a lot of savings. Many people who have very little or nothing probably wouldn't mind so much. But this is most definitely talked about in Revelation, as you were talking about, in the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. This is basically yes. the black horse. You know, they're in the this book written in Patmos. I think it was around about 90 AD. It was finally put down on paper. In fact, I visited the island years ago, and they took us to the place where apparently it was written, and it wasn't the Apostle John that wrote it. It was his little disciple, his little friend, his assistant, Procurus, I think his name was. But anyway, he scribbled all down what John was saying. So, you know, it was quite interesting to see how all the locals were certainly convinced that this was a very real experience and a very real book. But we need to know what the way out is. So what's your suggestion?
I think it's kind of twofold. One is I'm very encouraged by the protests that have been taking place in Europe. I mean, Americans, for the most part, aren't aware of them because it's not on our TV sets. But I've seen a protest in London that was 4 miles long. Kazakhstan, I'm sure you heard about the Kazakhstan government has yielded when there was a massive protest just this past week. The French, I particularly admire the French, the way they protest. They've never been shy about protesting in France. And I had to laugh when I saw that they'd surrounded Macron's home. And these French farmers brought these big machines, which were spraying manure onto Macron's home. And I really think that people like Macron and Boris, they need to start to feel the wrath of the people. And if they feel too comfortable, I don't think they're going to respond. And then they're going to be happy to remain on the payroll of the bankers and the lobbyists for Pfizer. So I'm encouraged by the protest. We're not seeing as many protests in America. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that I think Americans are not as awake as the Europeans are, sorry to say. The other is that in America, we do have what we call blue states and red states. The red states like Florida and Texas are against vaccine mandates, but blue states like New York and California are pro. So it's hard to get a national movement going. So, and the other thing that encourages me is the lawsuits like, Rainer Fulmetsch, the eminent German attorney who's suing the World Health Organization, is launching lawsuits around the world. And I know that the Bar Association of India is suing the World Health Organization for claiming that ivermectin doesn't work. And here in America, even, we've seen judges overturn some of the vaccine mandates as unconstitutional. We do have the Supreme Court right now, as we're recording this, is still considering whether or not the Biden administration's orders that people with 100 or more employees must have everybody vaccinated, which is absurd since vaccines don't stop transmission. But I'm encouraged by that. I'm encouraged by the protests. And I think if there's adequate pushback and the leaders really start to feel that they're being held accountable, they might back down and maybe they'll go to another plan and we might get some relief for a while. The other thing, though, is that because the elite, I'd like to use that word actually, because the bankers control the politicians, the intelligence agencies, the police and the military are largely controlled from the top down. It's possible that we need to prepare ourselves for the potentiality that the Bible's prophecy about the Antichrist will come to pass. But we need to keep our hopes up. We know that the Antichrist rule, it was prophesied only to last for 3.5 years. I find it kind of interesting, by the way, that talking about 2030, because that's about almost exactly 2,000 years after the ministry of Christ began. And we know that the Antichrist will be a counterfeit Christ. And according to the Orthodox Church, Christ was crucified in the year 33 AD, which is supposedly why the Freemasons love to use that 33rd degree. Is it possible that 2030 is going to be the beginning of the reign of the Antichrist? I don't know. But I do think we need to prepare ourselves spiritually for that potentiality that we might lose this battle. I mean, sometimes that happens. I mean, in America, we had the Civil War in the 1860s, and the South fought very valiantly. But there was a point when they saw that they were defeated by heavily outgunned and outnumbered by the North, and they finally had to give up. We have to be prepared for the possibility that we're going to lose the battle politically, and we need to. And so my next blog post that I'm planning to write is going to be about the spiritual response. I think we need to repent. I think we certainly need to be praying very hard and need to be obedient to God as much as we can so that he might intervene and perhaps grant us relief from this situation, much as the prophet Jonah did when he prophesied against a city, but that city repented and the prophecy of doom that God had given to Jonah, God relented and he took away the promise of doom. So we need to be repenting and we need to look at this, not just politically, but spiritually.
Look, I'm with your Orthodox people. Definitely. I think we're moving into an increasingly divided dualistic world where there is not a lot of in between. There are, you know, a whole bunch of people on one side. And I mean, this does look like a classic divide and rule policy, but there is a way to understand things the way they are, the truth. And there's also a narrative which is completely untrue, but which people are being encouraged along that direction too. Anyway, look, James Perloff, your website, jamesperloff.net. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to talk to fellow truth teller from the UK, and I'm so glad that internationally there are a great number of us who are awake, who are red-pilled. As you said, we're divided into two, the red-pilled people and the blue-pilled people, and we just want to make more red-pilled people, and that's why we're doing this.
Well, and of course, if you look at this, this is a war on God, a war against God, and God ultimately wins. And I think it's quite clear that the forces of darkness definitely do not get their way, even though things get very, very tough and rough. There's quite a well-organized, maybe a bit of a rabble against them, but ultimately, actually, the truth and the good wins out in the end. So anyway, James, thanks very much for joining us again.
Yes, and God bless you. God bless the listeners. Thank you so much for having me on, Tony.